Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is Commodity Week, the November 9 edition. USDA delivers something of a November surprise. Well, I guess we'll have to talk about that one today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Sue Martin of Ag and Investment Services out of Webster City, Iowa. Our panelists in studio today include Merrill Crowley of Crowley Commodities out of Watseka, Illinois, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, and Brian Stark of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org, on your smartphone at m.willag.org. We post all of our agricultural programming to both of those websites.
Support for Commodity Week comes from Agrigold Hybrids, featuring the Agrigold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgrigoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
You know, let's start our discussion, gentlemen, with this question. How is it that nearby November soybeans could possibly have lost 75 cents in the last week? Kurt Kimmel, weren't the bigger U.S. crop production figure and the improving conditions in South America built into the marketplace earlier in the month? I mean to say, we're dealing with futures and either everyone was asleep at the wheel or there must be something else yet to come.
Well, actually, Brian said it when we walked into the studio here. I believe that they're worried about the physical financial cliff we're facing here at the end of the year. When you talk to bigger traders and some investors, Obama being on TV today saying we're going to have to get together and back and forth, you wonder what our future brings. But the trade's been loaded up with speculative longs. We're in a downtrend. We took out support, and the selling just sort of fueled on itself. But the important thing from a technical point of view is to see if we could find some type of fundamental buying come into the market first place of next week to fulfill this oversold condition here in some short-term cyclical lows.
Merrill Crowley, the fiscal cliff, and anything else?
Well, we saw the lows in the beans break through that support that we'd been having for a long time. And then, like Kurt said, it just kind of fed on itself, breaking down lower and lower. And I think the start of that today was a surprise in the amount of yield that the USDA showed us for the increase in yield on beans.
Well, they all stole your thunder, Brian.
that's quite okay. I agree with what Kurt said kind of when I came into the office here to do the show. It's really about the speculative fund wanting to get out of risk assets right now as a whole as we come to the looming cliff that we have to deal with and try and find bipartisanship. And I think it's not just beans. I think you've seen some of this mentality for the last couple of months as we've known more about crop sizes. The fund just has not been interested since there hasn't been as big of a story.
Did it cause you to reconsider the importance of the reallocation that funds will go through in the month of December and what it might do to the marketplace too?
Yeah, I think it will. It's actually the first week of January is when a lot of funds reallocate their portfolios, and I think beans obviously will take a bigger hit. In fact, our bias is that I think corn will gain on beans here into the first of the year in a relationship kind of flip.
Well, how did that happen, Kurt? Because I know coming into the harvest that beans were the one that had the engine behind them. They were going to pull everything along.
Well, at that time, but we saw that bean yields were better than expected. China slowed down on their buying. They pretty well booked up. I imagine they'll continue to buy here as we move down the road. But when you look at corn, world feed grain, and even wheat, the coarse grain inventory is just a little bit more tighter than the Bing picture. And then plus two, with the urgency to get some corn, the commercial is going to use these breaks in here to sort of continue to gather inventory until he's covered up.
By the numbers for the week, the soybeans look like this. The November contract on the nearby had a high of $15.25¾. Its low was at $14.51. Indeed, it lost 75 cents Friday to Friday at $14.52 on its settlement price. The 2013 contract settled at $13.19¾. It, on the other hand, was just 16¾ cents lower. So not a bad look at the new crop, given what the old crop soybeans lost on the week, just a 13-cent loss there.
Well, it's hard to attack the new crop like we've been attacking the old crop. We know what we have with the old crop. And last year you didn't see any rallies start from South America weather until about mid-December. So you've got a tight situation. I mean, stocks to use is, what, 5.8, something like that, 5.6. So you just can't sell off new crop beans as hard as you've been doing the old, and you're taking the spread out. We had quite the spread building with the old crop versus new.
The USDA number showed a 39.3 bushel to the acre yield. That's an increase from the 37.8 in October. Total production for the 2012 growing season at 2.971 billion bushels. That put the ending stocks at 140 million. That's still an awfully small number.
Yeah, when you go back to past history, especially over the last 20, 25 years, it's about the third or fourth tightest. And like Merle said there, your stocks use ratio is relatively tight. So it puts a lot of emphasis on the southern hemisphere. The southern hemisphere is projected to have a big crop, and if they fail to produce that, it's going to make beans here in the U.S. Quite valuable as we go into next spring.
Let's talk about new crop sales, not old crop, but new crop soybean sales at this point. And I want to poll everybody. Is there a place now or in the very near future that you think folks ought to be thinking about a new crop soybean sale?
Well, we feel that you get these November beans back in this $14 level. That'd be a spot to scale into it. When guys push the pencil here, it seems 14 plus is a good number.
Merrill?
Based on past years, when you have 2 years or 3 years a row of a drought, you tend to have better odds of having a crop. So I'm not quite as high as Kurt. I'm more like 13.50, where I'd like to start with the beans. I still have my fingers crossed for 6.5 for Dease corn.
November beans, by the way, at 19¾ on the close today.
I would agree with Merrill. We actually started recommending to guys this week to sell some beans, start 5-10% up at that 13.50 level.
Okay, now let's move on to the corn. December futures, 7.55 on the high on the week, the low at $7.33, settlement price at 7.38¾, 0.75 cents lower. December futures of next year at 6.29¾, we're down 6¾ by the numbers from the USDA report. Friday morning, they're expecting a 10.725 billion bushel crop. That's up from the 10.706 that was released in October. The average yield at 122.3, up from the 122. And the carryout there, and rather than 619, now 647 million bushels. But however you cut that number, it's really small, Kurt.
Yeah, once again, you go back in past history, it's one of the tightest ones, not only here in the U.S., but, you know, worldwide. This suggests we're at pipeline supplies, and we're going to stay at pipeline supplies throughout this whole marketing year.
Anything in those numbers that you found of interest when you dug into them, Merrill?
I guess I was glad to see that we did have the crop from South America to help promote, get us by a little bit our tight situation.
Yeah, 25 million exports, imports from South America to do that trick.
I think that was the most surprising number to me, Todd, and the reason is South American basis levels have been escalating here in the past couple of weeks to a point where it's no longer profitable, at least at the current stage, to import corn into the United States and the Southeast as we've continued to monitor that situation. So that was kind of an interesting number. Obviously, we need that to carry through because the biggest thing that will be addressed in January is still this unknown harvested acreage. Is it too high? Will it come down? In our estimation, you could see 300 million bushels still taken off the crop size by January.
Have you been considering the acreage and how it might change in January?
I think it's a little too early to really start pushing your acreage. We have a lot of people looking, or at least talking about looking at planting more soybeans into the rotation after years of corn after corn and some of the poor performance we've seen with corn after corn compared to corn in a rotation.
Yeah, so that's for the new crop, and those numbers are really, really big. Some are pushing numbers as big as 97.5 million acres for new crop corn.
Yeah, historically higher prices, you bring all kinds of production out of the woodwork. The big question is producers going to stick on corn or are they going to switch to beans? When you visit around, there's some pockets in here, guys, you're just bound and determined to go beans. But I know one thing, wheat's huge, and there's going to be a ton of soft red winter wheat acres, and there's going to be a lot of guys try double crop.
Yeah, wheat is huge, and is it huge in Ohio and Michigan and some of the places that the Andersons deal with on a regular basis?
Absolutely. I think the biggest question for us in our eastern states is whether we had time to get everything planted, given the wet conditions that we've experienced in October. But I have a couple of customers in Indiana that doubled their acreage this fall, and I think if you look at the wheat double crop bean combination, works out pretty favorably comparable to corn.
So that would be something that might just happen. Let's take those wheat numbers up really quickly. December contract at $8.86.5. It was up 22 cents on the week. July at $8.88.5, up 13.5. Some interesting numbers from USDA as it was related to wheat because they changed some of the global stocks figures and how the exports were coming out of that. It appears that they believe the Black Sea can possibly move more wheat as an export than really might be available to move. Do you agree with them?
I don't. I think eventually some of the market share is going to come back to the U.S. I think it's been a little slow to start, but given the short crop in Russia, the pace of Ukraine and French wheat entering the marketplace, and not to mention the fact that Argentina has had a very, very wet spring. Spring for them down there as they try and plant their corn. I just think the U.S. will eventually get some market share after the first of the year.
So let's take up both the new crop and wheat and corn. So at this high a price at $8.88.5 on July for wheat, that was up 13.5 for the week, and new crop corn at $6.29.75, which was down 6.75. Would you recommend scale in sales for either of those commodities?
Yeah, we've been trying to push new Deese corn more up towards the 650. Boy, it starts sticks its head up there and there and just turns back south. But yeah, you get up there, yeah. A lot of guys pushing a pencil, and they like $6 cash corn locked in out of the field. That's profitable. As far as wheat goes, we've been kind of scaling into it. Didn't get anything off at $9 here, but I think that July up around $9 is a good sale.
Merrill?
Again, I think corn at $6.50 is a good sale. Wheat at $9, like Kurt says, is a very good sale. The thing that I think we are all concerned about and what we're working with the farmers is how do we get them to price after 3 years in a row? Any early pricing has been the wrong thing to do. And so it's kind of a push and shove game, especially before you get a chance to see what kind of rates you have for crop insurance.
Have you been able to figure out a way to do that just yet?
Just beg them. Get on my hands and knees.
Brian?
We've also been asking guys to scale in anywhere in this $8.50 to $9 area. One thing I'd point out that we've watched closely is you go out to December wheat of 2014 versus December 14 of corn. There's about a 260 spread. Historically, that is way wide. I think one thing guys can look out, the aggressive sellers, rather than looking out at $6 Deese 14 corn, if they're really wanting to go out that far, is to sell some Deese 14 wheat. And as that spread narrows up, you can look at converting it back to corn.
Hey, I have a second question for you because I think you deal with this more often than some. Is it easier to get guys at this time of year or any time of the year to sell new crop corn or new crop wheat? Because I think they just sell wheat across the scale.
No, I think for the advanced marketer, you're absolutely right. The advanced marketer is going to sell forward sell, but some of the few wheat bushels we take, most guys do sell it across the scale when it comes in.
Yeah, wheat's still uncertain with winter kill. The guys are just kind of nervous about it. This is probably the most aggressive because they got a lot more acres to work with.
Merrill?
Most of the guys that raise wheat are finally getting to the idea that you price some when you plant it, you price some when you get into the spring and see how it comes out of winter kill, and if you then see a good crop coming up, you try to price some more, and you work on percentages of the crop insurance.
All right, let's take a look at some of the rest of the numbers as they came in from Chicago for the week. The February live cattle this week at $129.35 were up 17.5 cents on the week. And then in the feeder cattle, we had the January's at $145.60. They were $1.075 lower. And the February lean hogs on the week at $86.32 were up $2.42. One note on that one, they put in an outside week. And it was outside of last week and the week before that and the week before that. It was kind of a big number. Kurt?
Huge. It's amazing. It's defying the law of gravity here, and hopefully it'll stay firm.
All right. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. We'll talk with Sue Martin of Ag and Investment Services out of Webster City, Iowa. Our panelists in studio today include Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Brian Stark of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County, and Merrill Crowley of Crowley Commodities out of Watseka, Illinois.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. November is starting out both cooler and drier than normal. The statewide average temperature was 40.3 degrees. That's 6.5 degrees below normal. The statewide average precipitation was 0.2 inches, 29% of normal. The U.S. Drought Monitor shows 42% of Illinois in some form of moderate to severe drought. Far southern Illinois is in a moderate drought, while parts of western and northern Illinois are in moderate to severe drought. Another 42% of the state is still considered abnormally dry, while 16% of the state is considered drought-free. The forecast for this weekend includes highs in the upper 60s and low 70s on Saturday across Illinois, with lows in the mid-50s on Saturday night. Highs on Sunday are expected to be in the mid to upper 60s. By Sunday night, a cold front will start to enter the state with lows ranging from the upper 20s in northwest Illinois to the low 50s in southeast Illinois. Big changes are in store for Monday as a cold front sweeps through the state. Ahead of the front, we should see widespread rains with possible amounts of 1 to 2 inches. After the front passes, temperatures will be much colder with highs in the 30s and 40s and lows in the 20s. We even have a chance of measurable snow in western and northern Illinois on Monday. Temperatures are expected to remain in the 40s during the day and in the 20s and 30s at night for the rest of the week. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
This is the November 9 edition of Commodity Week.
Support for Commodity Week comes from Agrigold Hybrids, featuring the Agrigold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgrigoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
Our panelists in studio today include Brian Stark of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County, Merrill Crowley of Crowley Commodities out of Watseka, Illinois, and Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. On the phone line with us is Sue Martin. She's at Ag and Investment Services in Webster City, Iowa. Thanks for taking the time with us. Good afternoon to you, Sue.
Good afternoon.
I bet it was a busy day there in your part of the world, but I want to ask you a quick question about how commodities are moving in the state of Iowa. Here in Illinois, they're moving in to our state in unusual patterns and fashions. You have some very large plants in Cedar Falls and Cedar Rapids and other places in the state. What's the movement of corn been like in your state?
Well, actually, it's not been that aggressive as one would think it should be. I know that ethanol plants, for example, have been pulling in some of their January contracts, and they wouldn't be doing that if they could get crops so easily from farmers, so they're having to pull in the January contracts early. And I think that when we look at this market, it's going to be a cash-led basis type of an affair that maybe for both beans and corn that leads us to some of these better prices.
Well, Sue, after Friday's report there, what type of price objectives are you kind of projecting here over the next 30 to 45 days?
Well, I think that our rally is going to be somewhat limited over the next 30 to 45 days for several reasons. One, okay, we have the South American weather at the present time looking a little bit more amiable, and so that's kind of been a little bit of a black cloud anyway for the last week or two, and that might persist as we go on through the month of December, although I think we need to be very watchful of Brazil doing a flip-flop where they go from too wet in areas to too dry. And I know southern Brazil, they're already kind of starting to rumor that a little bit. And so I think we need to watch that. But I think that, you know, the report today was, of course, perceived as pretty bearish, mainly because I think it, more than anything, it shocked the trade that the USDA would jump from 37.8 up to 39.3 and add on 1.5 bushels to the acre. And this was the largest increase in yield in history and for a November time frame. And I think the last year that it the market report exceeded trade at guesses in production by increasing was back in 1991. And so I think the market wasn't really totally, it had been working its way down, but it wasn't totally ready for that. And so when that occurred, it just was, you know, pedal to the metal on the downside, because then on top of all of this, we have this fiscal cliff talk, and the media loves drama, and I think that that's going to continue to weigh on us. However, on the other side of the fence, when I look at beans, I do these wave counts, and wave fours have been stopping everything. Never used to see wave fours, but wave fours have been stopping every market here. And if I'm doing my counting right, we hit our wave fours today with November beans at 1454 and three quarters. The January beans were a little bit higher because of the premium it once carried to the November. And so it was like around 1472, I believe. But you can expand through those prices, but you window around them. And yet, when I look at the chart itself, if I didn't know these wave counts, I'd be thinking they look horrible. And possibly with a head and shoulders top formation, that would project us down into the $12 range. I don't think that's going to happen. And I think that when we look at this report as it sits today, even though the USDA did increase our yield like they did, demand, of course, keyed in, ate up all of that increase other than 10 million bushels. So the net result was our stocks-to-usage ratio only grew about 0.1%, which is nothing. And then when you look at the world stocks, you know, one thing I thought was interesting is, and this is, I think, where the bear really was getting frustrated or, you know, more adamant about selling, was that we increased the carryout on beans for the world stocks and are standing at this time 4 million bushels higher than a year, or 4 million metric tons higher than a year ago, and that's with a major increase even in Chinese imports. And we're so front-end loaded on beans, we're running about 75% of this year's estimate. And, you know, if you took unknown destinations and add those in and figure that they might be China, you're probably looking at China is about responsible for almost 80% of our export sales. And so at the moment, it would make you think that they might be a little bit flat price, cash flat price hooked at the moment. and that maybe they, and we hear that prices are dropping off in China for soybeans, so that maybe they don't come back. And, you know, of course, exports were pretty dismal this last week, but that they maybe are slow to come back now, and they go hand to mouth from here for a little bit. And yet, on the flip side, our crushing margins in the U.S. are very, very good, and demand for soy meal is phenomenal. So that makes me think that not all is as bad as you think it would be, and that maybe these beans don't really go a whole lot lower.
Yeah, you know, we're all depending on South America for the saving soybeans and corn, and if we assume for a minute that they do produce this corn, how difficult or how will they be able to move this grain out of their country logistically?
Well, I think that's a good comment, because if you look at Japan today, for example, bought 500,000 metric tons of corn from the U.S. For shipment from January through February. And Japan has bought about 900,000 metric tons of corn from Brazil, and they did have a fabulous second crop corn, but they've had a lot of difficulty getting that out of the country. They're running about 2 months behind getting corn to where it should go to Japan, and therefore Japan, being concerned, has stepped up to the plate, paid more than what it's costing out of Brazil, and bought it from the U.S. So, and that's just corn. So if we're looking at 82 million metric tons of beans out of Brazil, I would have to say they're going to have a phenomenal problem and that exports are going to get backed up. But the situation is, it's the perception of it, that they get it. They actually consummate that production. And if you go back and look at history, whenever they've been trying to come up with a whole new record of production, they don't seem to meet the number. They seem to have issues, and they don't quite make it. So I'm wondering if that isn't another situation we're just looking at again, that they don't really come forward and make what they're talking about. But, you know, you have to assume the best as the crop goes in and have Mother Nature prove to you that it's going to be different.
Sue, looking at the world numbers off the report today, we saw the USDA lower the Australian wheat crop 2 million metric ton, which I think falls in line with what most of the trade was thinking. I just wanted your thoughts on the surprise to me being Argentina's corn crop. They've experienced a very, very wet spring to a point where it's taken them weeks to dry out, yet the government didn't change the estimate from 28 million metric ton. Do you think that's realistic? Do you think the production has kind of peaked, and are we going to see lower estimates in the future from South America?
I think we'll see lower estimates in the future. I thought when I looked at that number, too, that it was awfully high, that the USDA did not commit to where that crop really looks like it is. So I think, too, as we go down the road, that that's a number that's going to come down on corn. And, of course, Argentina is, you know, number three exporter of corn in the world. And so it's very important of how much acreage they actually get in. And, of course, they're running a little bit late. So it'll be interesting to see, because they're still kind of pretty wet. They're supposed to start drying out pretty well, but I thought that number was overrated by the USDA.
Thank you so much for taking the time with us today.
Thank you.
Sue Martin is with Ag and Investment Services in Webster City, Iowa. Now time for a word from our panelists in studio. We'll start with you, Kirk Kimmel.
There's a lot of moving targets, a lot of noise out there. We encourage you to sort of develop some type of a marketing plan and try to stick with it the best you can going through this winter.
Merrill Crowley?
I just wanted to thank you, Todd, for having me on, and appreciate being here today.
You're very welcome. And Brian Stark?
I would encourage producers to start taking a look at making some new crop sales around $6.50 in corn and $13.50 in beans.
Again, thanks to our folks in studio today, including Brian Stark of the Andersons, who you just heard from Champaign County, Kirk Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Merrill Crowley of Crowley Commodities from Watseka, Illinois. Our guest on the phone line, of course, Sue Martin of Ag and Investment Services out of Webster City, Iowa. You can listen to the program anytime you'd like on our website. The address is willag.org. That's WILLAG.ORG. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.